Chairman, Commissioners. I'm not sure if I've ever appeared before, so now I'm just called my name, Graham Todd. And I appear today, fact four, if you can note for the records, Halfway Bay Lands Limited, who are the successor entitled to the original submitter in respect to this matter, and
is that land or lands?
Lands. Lands. And I'm sorry, I can't say at this point whether the settlement of Halfway Bay Station has occurred or not, but certainly the contract is unconditional.
So we can just preach on the settlement.
So please note that. I understand there has been some correspondence from Mr. Edmonds' office about that matter. With me today is Mr. Farrell from Mr. Edmonds' office, Mr. Skelton, Mr. Faulkner, G. Sold, and also Mr. Gary Dent from Fluent Solutions, who has prepared evidence on behalf or in replacement of the evidence from Mr. Steele, who is not available today. Yep. But the evidence, and there is a brief evidence in respect to that matter. The matter is the submission seeks the rezoning of part of Halfway Bay Station, which I assume you're familiar with the locale of Halfway Bay Station.
We visited the site.
As rural vista zone. The rural vista zone being part of the operative district plan, and there's been quite a bit of debate as to whether or not the rural vista zone is up for consideration as part of stage one of the plan. In my submission, which I think has been accepted by the commission, it's open for people to seek such a zone as long as we can satisfy you, or part of the evidence is to satisfy you that such zoning can fit within strategic direction provisions as notified. And we've taken that a little bit further, as Mr. Farrell would address you. In respect of the suggested amendments to the strategic directions provisions which have been put forward by the council's officers. Now, in terms of my client, the original submission, that's addressed to page 91 of the section 42A report, and the report helpfully has produced for you, or reproduced for you, page 94, the introduction provisions of the rural vista zone. They're quite important for you to read those carefully, I'd submit to you, in the context of Halfway Bay, because whilst there is no existing facilities at Halfway Bay for a rural visitor, I don't think that is the be all and end all, given that there is other examples, particularly one at Cecil Peak, where there are no existing facilities for rural vista zone. What is important at Halfway Bay is the recognition that it is a highly used recreational resource in terms of the Lockie River and the areas beyond that in terms of outdoor recreation. And if you read carefully the introduction to the zone, if I just remind you, the rural visitor zones contain important recreation and visitor facilities, including accommodation and other visitor attractions. Certainly, it's a recreation area, important recreation area in the context of this district. B, that is in itself a visitor attraction. Goes on to say, significant physical resources in terms of buildings and facilities exist or are proposed in all the zones, both as attractions in their own right or facilities which serve the visitor industry and surrounding rural or recreation activities. And that's exactly what my client wants to do in part with the property in terms of purchasing it. It proposes to construct facilities which are yet to be determined, the scale and extent of those with time. But that's exactly the reason one sets its own, in my submission to you, to give the flexibility that they can then proceed with confidence to prepare such detailed plan. The introduction goes on to say, the most distinguishing feature of the visitor zones is their compact size, general self-sufficiency, and distance from the main urban areas, urban centres. That again, in my submission to you, is relevant to the consideration of the submission for this area to be rezoned. Given its isolation, the compactness of the area that is being sought by way of rezoning, and the ability for it to be self-sufficient in terms of servicing, and we are calling expert evidence to confirm that. One of the issues that has been raised as respects concerns transport. This property does not have any access to legal roads. So any and traditional means by which people access the site is by boat or by helicopter. And there's nothing proposed to change in that. We're not proposing any roads or anything like that. And we are proposing that it be serviced from either the airport or other approved helipads in the area, or indeed from the main Queenstown Town Bay. There's no other facilities which are provided. The station in itself does have the ability to transport stock to a different location, and that was encouraged by the council some years ago, and there is a take-out point for the barge at White Creek that you may be familiar with, but that is not proposed to be used as part of any servicing of this property for this visitor accommodation or any other support facilities that might be in the rural visitor zone. The commissioners will be familiar with the other rural visitor zones in the district.
Yes.
Okay, so I don't need to go.
I can't say all of them.
Sorry?
I can't say all of them. I am familiar with them. The other two, we visited several of the Wachtapu area.
Right. Well, those are really the matters that I wish to raise, because I'm relying on the evidence that has been answered by already, all of which will come about from either summaries presented to you today or answers to questions in respect to those matters. And I'm happy to answer any questions now. It's my submission to you that in an area such as this, where we have such a high reliance on tourism, which is a key driver for the economy, is my submission to you that you would almost be remiss not to be providing for rural visitor zones in the rural district. I'm actually staggered that they have not been included as part of the stage one, when you're being asked to look at the rural zones per se, that you're not being asked to look at the sub-zones or the special zones, which play such an important part of the it seems to me that we can't really deal with it in isolation at all, and that's what's been attempted. Certainly you can't deal with strategic directions provisions without some certainty as to how you give effect to the certain strategic directions. And this is part and parcel of the problem. I know it's not your making, but part and parcel of the problem about hearing submissions in terms of the proposed district plan and parts, because I think we've got almost a disconnect, which is totally artificial, and you're being asked to think about things which you're not being asked to consider. And it seems strange, but anyway, that's what I was saying. I appreciate the fact that you've given consideration to the fact to the argument about whether we can consider this as part of this thing, and I support the conclusions that you came to in that regard. So I'm open to the order if you wish to hear from the witness. If you have any particular order, I'll ask Mr. Skelton just to summarise this evidence.
I'll just check. Question for yourself, Mr. Thompson.
No,
Mr. Thompson.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Would it please you for me to summarise my evidence, or are you taking it as read? I can just answer some
questions. I'll take it as read. Please do it. So you just.
I can just, I'll just highlight a couple of the agreements that Dr. Reed and I have, is that it is part of quite rural flatlands surrounded by more outstanding features, including the Lockheed River and the surrounding mountains, and that Halfway Bay is almost too small in its own right to be its own landscape, so it is part of an ONL, though it does have more rural characteristics, less wild characteristics it's more modified. There's two existing dwellings there. One is a white homestead located somewhere sort of near the eastern edge of the site, and that's reasonably difficult to see, I would say, for most parts in the Kingston Road. It's not until you actually get closer to the site on the surface of the lake that it becomes obvious. So even though it's a bright white color, it still is nestled in with existing vegetation that screens it very well. And then there's another building located on the upper terrace of the cell, which my first visit, I didn't even know was there. It wasn't until I went back a couple times that I realized it was a large building. So I think the landscape does have capacity to absorb quite a few structures in discrete pockets. Dr. Reed did say that I placed too much emphasis on the retention of existing vegetation. I would say that that's probably fairly accurate, I think, to say. I also know that the applicant submitter doesn't have any desire to remove any of the existing vegetation or the large shelter belts. When we got on site, we did talk about a way to do a stage progression. So some of them are wild conifers that would be something where you could plant behind it, and then at the moment that those trees reach a stature of, say, 8 meters, that then the wild conifers could be removed. I think maybe Dr. Reed's main concern with her suggestion to push the zone all the way to the west is potentially that you could end up with a 12-meter high building right in that open pasture at the front part of the site, the lake edge of the site. And I do think that that would be an adverse effect and could increase the visibility of development, potentially degrade parts of the L&L. I also think I understand that's not the applicant's intention, the submitter's intention. He understands the value of that open space and the value that it provides to the amenity of the site. And to the south of that is a narrow corridor where there, you have the existing wall shed, which is a nice green building, quite a large green building, but it's not highly visible. And so you get close to the site, you can't see it at all really from Kingston Road. And then behind that is a nice cluster of existing mature vegetation where I think that could really absorb quite a bit of rural visitor type development. Again, from the Kingston Road, there's about 5.2 kilometers of the Kingston Road where you could potentially see, and that's about 3.5 kilometers away. And in most of my experience, we have a dark, recessive building with a natural backdrop. 3.5 kilometers is enough of a distance for that to be well absorbed visually. And I have proposed a couple of, it is an outstanding natural landscape, so I think that in the future it would be appropriate for this, any development that occurs here, to be more aligned with O&L provisions than rural visitor provisions, and that is to protect visual amenity. When you look at Walter Peak Station, there is a classic homestead there that's white with a red roof. This one does have a white building, sort of more towards the center of the site, but I think it would be more appropriate to have your dark recessive natural materials in this landscape.
So in essence, that you're saying that the existing provisions, the existing rules in the IV zone would enable any, whatever your plan to put forward, to be, for the landscape considerations to be?
It would be subject to a resource consent process, and part of the rural visitor zone as it stands now does give regard to mitigating adverse effects on landscape and visual amenity values, nature conservation values, natural character in the rural environment. So it would still be subject to that consenting process.
And that will be sufficient to deal with any adverse effects to the O&L without actually cutting back the extent of the zone or anything like that?
It could be. Yes, I was recently involved at Walter Peak with the new amphitheater that they're building there, and that was a lot different than the other buildings. It was more natural materials, dark, low recessive roof in in the slope of the natural landform. So it was subject to those assessment matters in terms of natural character and visual amenity. Again, I suppose it's difficult because the rural visitor zone as it's the future of the rural visitor zone is ambiguous, as I understand.
Because it's been a while. It's been a long year. And just remind me what Marion Reed was recommending.
Marion did provide a, she felt that if you shifted the, if you didn't allow the front part of the zone, the part that's adjacent to the lake, if that wasn't a rural visitor, that the effects of buildings could be mitigated. But I don't really agree with that because the back part of the zone is on an elevated terrace. Yeah. So if you end up with a 12-meter high building there, I think it would potentially affect the skyline. It doesn't have the terrace to absorb it visually. So I think development up on the upper part could potentially be more adverse than development on the bottom part.
But again, it would be a contained application, and that could be taken into account, couldn't it?
That's right.
You're not suggesting we don't zone the aperturas?
No. I'm just saying that I don't understand the rationale for saying that the upper part of the terrace would be
just because it's more problematic. That there could be actually more intrusive.
That he's given for lot living stations. He spent quite a bit of time describing the traditional pattern in which these stations have developed, including buildings near the lake edge because of the reliance on transport and so on. I think probably your answer to Mr. Mountford foreshadows what you tell me, that pattern relevant when you're starting afresh here, as opposed to, you know, affirming something traditional at Wolf Peak?
You're talking about the landscape pattern of the paddocks and the shelter belts.
Yeah, and the buildings going near the waterfront and stuff.
Rural residential, yeah. And even the corridors that are through the side, like the existing roads and things. I think that does preclude any future development. It's a cue for how development could occur here. And it's important culturally, and it's part of what people want to experience, is that distinct New Zealand rural character, especially in an environment like this that is set into such a highly natural frame.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
My questions have been answered already.
Thank you.
Mr. Steve. Mr. Dean's here, this just repeats what has been previously submitted to you, so he's able to answer your questions.
So it seems to be the same as Mr. Craig Steele's. Question I have is in paragraph 8B, talking about the land proposed, well, you're saying there's sufficient suitable area in the land proposed for wastewater to be disposed of. Where do you see that occurring?
closer to the river, away from. So that the sort of system I envisage is a denitrification capable plant, wastewater plant, right. And then disposal to ground.
So
on the lower terraces.
When you visited the site, that lower terrace was clearly waterlogged, it was covered in ice. And I'm just wondering whether that is really a suitable site when we visited there in winter to consider that.
Oh, yes,
disposal option.
The outer margins of that river plain probably is.
Oh, it was all the way back, pretty much all the way back to the rough times.
Well, then there are other options, elevated terraces, which would probably be more, perhaps more useful.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you were using more elevated terraces, would you need to pump, or could it still be gravity fed?
I would probably do the treatment at the bottom and then pump the wastewater up to a suitable disposal for the location.
Okay. Is Parkway Bay, is that on grid or off grid?
Off grid.
It's off grid. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, they can rely on the power source for that.
Yeah, so there'd be quite an investment to get if you're pumping the wastewater you're actually looking at.
Well, it depends on price.
Yes.
It would be a power source that you'd create to service the development.
Yes.
Probably, I wouldn't anticipate that. That would depend on the scale of the development.
Right.
Nearest opportunity, but
it's all
definitely the local option.
Yes. Yeah.
Scale of the action to the plant.
Okay, thank you.
You support them.
For example, we'd expect the ground at Parkway Bay to be considerably better than, say, the centre of Queenstown. And so, if you can build ICARPs in the centre of Queenstown in quite poor liquefaction susceptible ground, it's probably feasible at Parkway Bay to build something build something there.
Okay.
So in the grand scheme of things, the risk of liquefaction is not an insurmountable risk. Extent of an existing mapped alluvial fan has it?
Yes, I thought that was yes.
Okay.
And so is that an area that should be excluded from area A, or is it?
Not necessarily, no. Most of those mapped hazards are very broad brush that have been done by aerial mapping or just a general sort of overview. And most of the time when you actually do a proper assessment of those areas on the ground, when you look at the size of the catchment and the size of it, and you do test fits and you model the behaviour, you can still readily develop in some of those areas. It's not always the case, but it's quite often the case.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Farrell.
Summarised my understanding of Mr. Buxton's outstanding concerns. I won't read them out. Paragraph 3. In my opinion, none of these reasons or concerns are sufficient to justify why the proposed rezoning is not the appropriate outcome in this case. In my view, while the rural visitor zone objective, to be clear, the operative rural visitor zone objective, is focused on existing rural visitor land uses, that provides scope for the extension of activities within the rural visitor zone, and it does not prevent or constrain the ability to rezone rural general land into rural visitor. I know there is at least one case where the rural visitor zone exists with no rural visitor activities, and perhaps I should, if you wouldn't mind, delete activities and replace it with facilities. Because I'm not actually clear, there could be some activities that are undertaken. There's certainly no built development that I'm aware of. And that is incessantly. Moreover, if it's considered necessary, the objective could be tweaked so that it provides for the ongoing operation of rural visitor areas, not just existing rural visitor areas. Deletion of one word into the objective could clarify that matter. In my opinion, it does not matter that the rural visitor zone provisions are uncertain in terms of the development capacity that can be provided. Nor does it matter that we do not know the details of any proposed development or that a structure plan is not provided. And to be clear at this time. What is more important is that the opportunities for and the benefits of diversifying into tourism-related activity is provided for, where the effects of that development can be managed within a framework that achieves the outcomes set out in the relevant strategic direction parts of the plan. And there in C and D, I just refer back to my earlier evidence commenting on transport and the loss of productive farmland. In respect of the outstanding concerns raised by Dr. Reid, Dr. Reed supports rezoning of approximately half the area sought to be rezoned and considers that the proposed bespoke rules have merit in terms of the management of potential adverse effects. However, she remains opposed to the full extent of the proposed zone or rezoning. In my view, the size of the land area, including in comparison to other rural visitor zones, is not particularly relevant to the assessment of the rezoning request. As addressed in the evidence of Mr. Skelton, the landscape can absorb potential development within the area of land requested to be rezoned. Mr. Skelton effectively concludes that the rezoning can occur whilst protecting RNL value. Paragraphs 7 and 8, you've actually already heard from me when I presented to you the Ngāi Tahu evidence.
Yes.
It's exactly the same, except the very last line on page 3, where I refer to rules, for example, recommended in this case by Mr. Skelton to address the problem. And this is more of a benefit, I guess, for Commissioner Mountford and Commissioner Crawford, but also to reinforce for that in addition to the above matters, I wish to draw to your attention the evidence I've submitted and presented to in relation to the PDP in regard to tourism in the district and in the rural zone. To summarise, and I'm sorry, I've given you the references to two areas of evidence which was reasonably comprehensive, at least in terms of the time and effort put into it. To summarise, I consider the district plan should be amended to more appropriately recognise and provide for the significant benefits of tourism throughout the district, including within the rural zone. So the evidence I refer to is my evidence on recommending amendments to the strategic directions, and then more specifically to Chapter 21. In my view, the continuation of a rural visitor zone in the district plan framework is one mechanism for appropriately recognising and providing for tourism-related activities in rural locations. And Mr. Todd alluded to this earlier. I observe the QLDC Section 43 report and write a reply for Chapter 3 recommends a new strategic objective and policy. Objective 3.2.1.4. The significant socio-economic benefits of tourism activities across the district are provided for and enabled. And policy 3.2.1.4.1 enable the use and development of natural and physical resource for tourism activity where adverse effects are avoided, remedied or mitigated. Rezoning the land rural visitor zone would be entirely consistent with and give effect to these provisions, and I'd just like to highlight that in my evidence, primary evidence for this matter, I didn't refer to those provisions. I was only referring to the provisions in the notified version. My conclusion, I maintain my earlier conclusion that the rural visitor zone is more appropriate than the proposed rural zone provisions for that part of Halfway Bay, which my client seeks to zone.
Just a comment really on that table you included in your evidence in chief. We've gone through so many of the objectives and policies and commissioned on them, just that some of them didn't seem very applicable at all. I've said some of them are, I think perhaps could have gone further, but it's not really a question. I mean, referring to the Queenstown CBD as an example, or provision for affordable housing, it doesn't seem that this particular case has much to do with it.
No, not too much to do with it.
Recognise and develop and sustain the Queenstown and Wanaka Central Business District, for example.
Yeah, so which one was that?
Well, it's the very first one on that table. It was one example. In fact, the first two.
Well,
really a question. interesting because you have done a comprehensive identification of provisions, but I don't think you've.
I guess loosely what I'm saying is, and it's related to the transport aspect, any attraction, anything that attracts a visitor to the area they're going to go to, Franklin or Queenstown in this case, to get to the site, under the rural general zoning, that attraction doesn't exist to the extent that it would.
Okay. And on page, or your last page anyway, providing access to housing that is more affordable. That isn't surely what you're talking about.
Well, I think it does actually. Any provision of land where housing is enabled.
But this is, we're talking about tourists and visitors, aren't we? Not permanent visitors.
Well, with respect, design doesn't provide a staff accommodation. And, for example, again, at Walker Peak, there is quite extensive staff accommodation, which is provided by the developer, the operators of the tourist site there, for their staff.
I'm here representing NZTA. We have lodged previous submissions and we've lodged pieces of evidence from the society of coal and some of other evidence, which I think you've already seen and read.
I have to apologise, I couldn't read your emails.
Oh, that's fine.
So, editable?
No, that's okay. Because what I was going to suggest, so that's absolutely fine, just don't worry about that at the moment. As a result of one of the commissioners' minute, there have been some discussions between NZTA and one of the submitters, Jardine. So there have been some developments, so I don't want to take you to a position that's already been filed where things have moved on about. So I'm going to reverse the order. And let you hear from the two witnesses first, and then I can deal with the legal submissions at the end, if that's acceptable to you. And they can update you as to where things have got to. There's no point traversing ground where that aren't in discussion anymore. There is one other matter that I've been given a copy of some submissions for the Henson Family Partnership that Mr. Goldsmith presented on the 11th of August with a suggested rule for dealing with some of the NZTA concerns. And I've only just seen that today, but the suggested rule that he puts forward is not acceptable to NZTA, and I would just like to make sure that the commissioners are aware of that, and that Mr. Sizemore in particular has asked about his view of what Mr. Goldsmith put forward in his legal submissions.
We'll see how we go, but I mean, if we get to the point where you haven't completed by lunchtime, then you'll have the opportunity then
to come back. I think we're the last. So we'll start, see where we get to, and then I can give you an indication of how much more I think we've got to go, and then you can make a decision about whether you want to finish us and finish the day,
yes,
or have a break and come back.
Well, also, if you want some more time to consider.
That's fine. Okay. Yeah, no, I've seen it, and I know what my, I just wanted to make sure that given he has addressed Mr. Sizemore's evidence in his submissions and come up with a rule which he says addresses NZTA's issues, that those questions are specific. So Mr. Sizemore just prepared a brief summary of his evidence to assist.
Issues. State Highway 6 between the west side, the Shadow River, and the State Highway 6, State Highway 6A roundabout, known as the Frankston Flats area, sees around 23,000 vehicle movements every day and 1,900 movements peak times. It's a peak period between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. So the project is intended to facilitate large. Large increases in traffic volumes that would be associated with intensified commercial or industrial activities in the area. Any development along the section of State Highway needs to be carefully planned so that the safety and efficiency of State Highway is not compromised. The Transport Agency has opposed submissions seeking rezoning of business or commercial zoning along the north side of State Highway in the Frankton Flats area, because the increased traffic movements associated with these activities are not compatible with the safe and efficient management of State Highway. The Transport Agency supports higher density residential zoning in this area instead. Higher density residential development in the Frankton Flats area is also consistent with efficient public transport. The Otago Regional Council has plans to expand the current public transport services operated in the Moxley Basin. The Transport Agency plans to provide supporting infrastructure improvements such as bus stops and bus priority measures at key locations to support the new public transport services in the area. So for public transport to work most effectively, it relies on density development, and that's a combination of both commercial, industrial and residential. Commercial and industrial development is already provided for the Franklin Flat zone. For this reason, the Transport Agency supports median and or high density residential zone in the Franklin Place area on the north side of State Highway 6. So the outstanding issues with WM Grant, number 4555. The Transport Agency opposes any business or commercial zoning in the Hanson Road area, as the State Highway 6 Hanson Road intersection is not equipped to deal with increased volumes of traffic associated with such development. The Transport Agency has plans to make this intersection left in and left out to avoid dangerous right turn movements on the state highway. The intersection design is not suitable for high traffic volumes associated with business or commercial developments. The General Trust and Hanson Family Partnership. The Transport Agency opposes the submissions by General Trust and Hanson Family Partnership, which seeks business mixed use zone on the north side of State Highway 6 in the Franklin Place area. The Transport Agency maintains its position that this is inappropriate because of the likely traffic generation rates and cross highway pedestrian movements, which would be much higher than from a residential zone and is not consistent with safe and efficient operation on the State Highway. The Jardine Family Trust and the Remarkable Station Limited. I have reviewed the supplementary evidence provided by Mr. Jason Bartlett, dated 8th August 2017, which includes further information about potential access options to service the expansion of the Jack's Point zone. I noted in my rebuttal evidence that the Transport Agency's preference is for an existing state highway access to be used the accesses to be used to service the proposed development. In his rebuttal, Mr. Bartlett assessed two access options to service the proposed Jack's Point zone expansion: an upgrade of the Mary Jack Road intersection on State Highway 6, or an upgrade of this intersection in combination with a new State Highway 6 intersection to access the additional 541 dwellings at Homestead Bay. In his rebuttal evidence, Andy Carr notes that there will be downstream effects from this new access to the State Highway 6 from the Homestead Bay development. This has been addressed in Mr. Tony Cole's evidence. The Transport Agency must assess additional state highway accesses through the Government Road Powers Act. Any new accesses must be consistent with maintaining the safe, efficient functioning of the state highway network. Based on the information provided by Mr. Bartlett, the Transport Agency would, in theory, support either access option. However, the Transport Agency will still need to complete an assessment under the Government Road and Powers Act closer to the time of development prior to approving any access, reconfigurations, or additional state highway accesses. So, in conclusion, it's important that the hearing panel consider the safe and efficient functioning of the state highway and also the demand for further residential development and desirability of enabling cohesive transport networks when considering the zoning requests.
Thank you. Now, would you like to ask Mr. Smith more some questions, or would you like to hear from Mr. Cole first, and then you can direct the question at either of them, and they can decide between them which who is the best to answer?
I think it might be best to hear from Mr.
Cole.
I suspect there's a very much
yes,
an engineering question.
Generally agrees with the position reached by Council's reporting officers, Kimberly Banks, Wendy Banks, Ruth Evans and Vicky Jones, as recorded in the Transport Agency's legal submissions presented by Ms. Jo Aquia. The outstanding matters raised by council officers and submitted to the transport agency does not agree with our outline below. Medium density residential zone policies and rules. Mrs. Epinard's legal submissions discuss the responses of the council's experts to my evidence on the medium density residential zone and the high density residential zone policies and rules. As the council's rebuttal evidence was not available when my rebuttal was prepared. The outstanding issues are the notification rules for the MDRZ, Rule 8.6, should be amended so they are consistent with the HDRZ Rule 9.6, as amended by Kimberley Banks, if any MDRZ land is to remain along State Highway 6. Policy 8.2.9.6 of the medium density residential zone should include a note recording the requirement to consult the transport agency as recommended by Kimberley Banks for policy 9.2.8.5 of the high density residential zone, but any medium density residential zone land is to remain along Title 6. W and M grants submitted 455. It makes sense from an integrated planning perspective to have residential development concentrated on the Frankton Flats area. If it is not concentrated here, then it will lead to urban sprawl, which increases the demand to travel. The transport agency therefore supports a high density residential zone in the Hanson Road area, provided that access is obtained from Hanson Road and development is preceded by the reconfiguration upgrade of the intersection of Hanson Road and State Highway 6. The Otago Foundation Trust Board, submitted 408. Otago Foundation Trust Board has sought the zone of an area along State Highway 6 from rural to medium density residential. The Transport Agency has had discussions with the Trust Board regarding access to the proposed development site and supports the proposed medium density residential zoning on this basis. The Transport Agency's view is that medium density residential zoning is more appropriate than rural zoning as it enables reasonable development opportunities within the framework of constructed land. Jardine Family Trust and the Market Association of Lips submitted 715. In response to various statements of rebuttal evidence, including mine and Tony Sizemore's, Mr. Jason Bartlett provided a statement of supplementary evidence to the hearing panel. This addressed many of the Transport Agency's concerns around the lack of information that had been provided about those additional state highway access proposed by the Jardine Family Trust and Remarkable Station Limited to service the proposed Jacks Point Zone expansion. While the Transport Agency still need to assess and approve any additional state highway accesses through the Government Land Powers Act at the time of development, the Transport Agency is, in theory, supportive of the access options proposed by Mr. Bartlett. The Transport Agency has discussed the access issues with Mr. Bartlett and Ms. Wendy Banks via teleconference in response to the minute issued by the hearing panel. The Transport Agency reiterated that its preference is for development to be accessed via an upgraded Mary Jack Road. If this is not possible, then the Transport Agency could support a new access to serve the development. However, a new state highway access will have downstream effects on the safety and efficiency of the existing state highway accesses to the larger zone. The Transport Agency therefore suggests that the intensification of Homestead Bay should be a discretionary activity and that any application to intensify the development should be required to assess the efficiency and safety of the other state highway accesses so these can be upgraded by the developer if necessary. Ultimately, while the Transport Agency retains the ability to grant or refuse additional state highway accesses under the Government Road and Powers Act, from an integrated planning perspective, it is preferable that the developments envisaged by the district plan align with the safe and efficient functioning of the state highway network. The supplementary evidence provided by Mr. Bartlett and conversations with Mr. Bartlett have given the Transport Agency confidence that access to the state highway to service the proposed expansion of the Jacks Point Zone can be achieved in a way that promotes safe and efficient functioning of the state highway. The Transport Agency is generally supportive of the evidence produced on behalf of the Council in relation to transport and assessment of the rezoning submissions mentioned above. The Transport Agency opposes any rezoning to business, industrial or commercial zones along the Northern side of the State Highway between the west side of the Shadow River and State Highway 6, 6A roundabout. Transport agency is generally supportive of the State Highway access options proposed by Mr. Bale's supplementary evidence on the Jack's Point zone expansion. However, the Transport agency will still need to approve any proposed accesses under the Government Rank Powers Act prior to development. And the Transport agency will strongly oppose any additional provisions that attempt to override and confuse this process.
Okay, and I just wonder, would you like some comment on the state of Cosmos proposed world at the moment, or would you like to? Do you know what I'm talking about? He's proposed effectively a cap on.
Yes, it's just a carriage proposal.
Yes.
Yes,
I think we would like to hear that.
Yes, and so there's some practical issues. There's also some issues about all this, the rules and says that it's intended to deal with NZA's concerns with fuzzy news, but I don't think it's actually been discussed with you directly. So there's some practical issues. There's also some issues about it does address what's intended to address the intersection effects, but it doesn't address the wider downstream effects. So I would like, I'm presuming you're going to ask the question anyway, Mr. Sorokin, anyway, a comment on that, particularly the practical aspects of it.
So, I mean, the intent of these rules is to limit the traffic generation from that parcel of land in its entirety to total vehicle movements out of that land into the Hawthorne Drive, say, or 6 roundabout at the weekday peak hour. So, in principle, that can work from a sort of a theoretical point of view, but from a practical point of view, how do you ensure that that limit is not exceeded? Now, that I should just add that is based on an assessment of the available capacity for that intersection still to operate as an acceptable level of service, but it would. Not that's based on assessment today, and of course one of the issues there is the underlying traffic conditions on the highway at that time. So I guess they then to fairly apportion that over so that one landowner or one development doesn't take up the lion's share of that. They have suggested not generating more than 55 vehicle movements per hectare of land, which on the face of it again seems not unreasonable. The issue that we have there is with the fact that one consent might appear with a certain proposed mixed use, which being mixed use there's a variety of different generations that possibly might be out of that consent depending on how extensive it is. And so that would be, I'm assuming it was proposal to amalgamate that traffic generation and look how that met that rule under the 55 big movements per hectare. The part of the issue there is the practicalities of assessing that and then the time delay there may be from consenting to development. In terms of full operation of any given activity, and then of course other consents coming on and those assessments being done, and yet those traffic generation the rates still increasing. So there are some practical and of course the level of assessment that needs to be done at each particular consent that comes through. So there are some practical issues that we see in terms of actually administering the rules. And again, compliance with those rules would be assessed in accordance with the standard procedures, which does use that 10-year planning horizon. The other thing with that, it is limited to the intersection of that particular intersection of Hawthorne Drive, that one roundabout, and there is no discussion of how downstream and upstream effects might be mitigated. Our concerns are not just around the performance of the intersection. We have concerns around those cross highway pedestrian movements in particular. We have concerns
concerns around goals, I guess, we're trying to achieve for the transport system and what deserves to enable public transport. We don't see anything in here that would provide, I guess that's hard to put that into a rule, but this is what we're saying, this is a very narrow view, it's a very narrow view of the operation of the highway rather than taking that wider point.
Just across highway, as I understand, the commission on both sides of the road is the fine hammer at one side of the road and you go by cell phone charger over the other side. But you know, so it's that.
So there's the cross highway, there's cross highway pedestrian as well as that cross highway vehicle movements.
Yeah.
And so that tendency to ultimately looking at those destination trips to the commercial residential, sorry, to the business mixed use. So that might come from future residential developments and the current residential developments across on the east side of the river. And so we're getting, and then that, as you guys pointed out, that then you cross to, you know, do whatever you want to do, backwards and forwards across the highway, and that's adding more vehicle movements through that roundabout.
Well,
just similar to the transfer from an integrated planning perspective, it makes sense from having residential there, in my view, and that would be a traffic demand management tool. People who live and work in the area, so then they may not need to use vehicles at all. So if you can restrict residential on one side, this would be residential on the other side, but just have a commercial on both sides, like Tony said, people travel from our town, go to a big box retail in their vehicle, then they want to go to some other commercial activities on the other side of the state of the world, be very unlikely to walk.
Yeah.
So, but from a travel demand management, residential would be a better tool. And it also provides that density of residential development there that would help kickstart public transport and make it more viable.
In terms of the questionnaire, I think we'll stay with that area first. It's probably better for us to question area by area.
Oh, absolutely. And
looking at this area, we've actually looked at it from the cemetery, Franklin Cemetery, all the way through to quite a right, one essentially from a planning perspective,
yes.
One pitch.
Unit.
Yes, and even though it's different submittals.
Yes.
So we'll deal with that one first and what we're talking about. Of course, that is me.
I just want a point of clarification about the zoning. I think my seismic preference is the medium density zoning. And I think you're talking about the whole stretch from Hampton Road up to Hawthorne Drive. And I think, Mr. Sizemore, you say higher density without saying that you prefer medium. So could we just say what together, collectively, is your preference? I think Sizemore, you said it was medium on behalf of the NZTA. But I just want to make sure I know which zone and how much. And this is a plan we currently have with it, if you want to mark something out.
Well,
it was originally proposed under the proposed plan. Some of it would be medium density, and we were not opposed to that. We had some concerns about getting pedestrians across the state highway safely, but overall we were support. And I think our viewers have evolved that we would support medium or high density. Given that some of the land would possibly be sterilised or unavailable because of the airport and Eleanor's boundary.
And there's the transmission lines as well. So we, what did you say, was the topic?
Yeah.
So there might be some areas where, because of that, the need for high density. So I think your view is residential's fine and commercial's not. So that's it.
And the high density did come out of that. I mean, there is an argument, I think, within the Mr. Goldsmith said that it's around that sterilisation of some of that land, and that's our view, is that a way to mitigate that is a comprehensive development plan would be able to intensify those areas that weren't sterilised and look for other more open space type uses for those areas which couldn't be built on. And I guess that's a pragmatic view from our point of view, so that actually the total yield out of that collective parcel there was still not going to create significant concerns for us from the operation of the highway. In particular, it assists in the functionality of the public transport system.
Does it test the limits of your toleration for housing zoning? If the whole area from Hampton Road to Crowd Line was zoned high density, would that interfere with the operation of the transport system? I'm not saying it's all going to be developed like that, but think of it from our point of view, we have to paint the colour of it.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So I mean, from a bringing the discussion to a high level, more of an overview of the basin. We have, as the growth and development, I'm sure you're aware, has happened at such a rapid pace within the district, it is become more obvious through the various plan studies and things that we've done over recent years that the only way that we can continue to function the network in a reasonably efficient manner is a much stronger reliance on public transport within the district. And so we have recognised through that the high density residential really enables public transport, and that the intensification of residential activities within the Frankton Flats, that means that we are trying to preserve in particular the corridor to the east, the crossing of the Shoah River, from, you know, that's moving into another hearing stream, but it does have a relevance in the fact that if we can intensify that Frankton Flats residential area, then it's less likely for us to get the pressure to dwell on the urban sprawl issue and preserving Shoah River Bridge is one of our key concerns, because it's a significant challenge, as you can probably imagine.
I've got some other questions, but not about this.
Maybe something that you might answer, just like we are, and almost from a column, but we've got some circumstances, and the one at One Hanson Road is the classic one, where NZTA is saying only residential, and the airport is saying no residential. Now, how do we deal with that conundrum? Because the only practical use that we have given to it by the site, any reasonable use, is for winter feed, break feed, 10 cows, I think they calculated, could be accommodated on the site. And I know, Ms. Applegaard, that you are involved on both sides of those issues.
Airports.
and NZTA. Now,
both of which are strategic infrastructure. I don't think you've got to weigh up on the evidence, but it may well be the answer is that the needs of both dictate an outcome, and both them strategic infrastructure dictate an outcome that is not acceptable to the developer. But that's a cost benefit analysis, and weighed into that is the needs of strategic infrastructure, both of them.
And it's not uncommon, and Christchurch we have that issue as well, that we've got State Highway, we've got the airport, we've got the transmission line. So quite often the concoction of all of those things will, you know.
But it's not often that it's.
So I don't think you say, well, this is the contest between the airport and NZTA and which one's got the greater need. I think the issue is where you've got three competing interests here, and it may well be that the two sets of strategic infrastructure will outweigh, in terms of cost and benefit analysis, the desire of the developer. I don't think it's a question of picking and choosing between NZTA and the QRC.
I wasn't thinking we'd pick the treatment necessarily. I'm just thinking how you solve the problem.
Well, I think, I don't know enough about the practicality, but I think what Mr. Sizemore answer was to your question was that would be one area where, to the extent there is land outside the noise contour available, that would be somewhere where there could be intensification of high density residential. But I don't know enough about the practicality of that.
Can
I just ask you a question of clarification on the site that we're actually.
This is local shopping zone?
No, the other side. Is this the grants?
The little triangle.
The triangle of piece of grants.
Yes. There is virtually no land.
I do understand that conundrum because we have had dealings with the grants and on another matter. And so we do appreciate that.
Is it a piece of public space?
Yeah, potentially that's
right. Well, I see the cemetery on the way here, but there's obviously one next door.
Yes, though, it is a conundrum where that's a particularly challenging piece to because of the cross runway, the noise control boundary juts out into the property. There's maybe the removal of the cross runway on that side.
Well, that's intimated to us as a potential, but that came with extending the noise boundaries into all the existing residential areas.
Yeah. That causes its own issues. Yes.
Okay. Do you have any questions on the freight investment?
Getting back to that rule we were talking about for the limiting the capacity.
Would you like the one in front of you?
Well, we've seen. No, it's really just a question: is this opposition in principle, or is it just saying that? Is there any scope for tweaking that rule to make it workable?
There probably is some scope in terms of just from that narrow view of preserving capacity at that intersection. I don't think there is any way in having a rule that would mitigate the concerns we have around cross-highway vehicle movements and cross-highway pedestrian movements, and in particular, looking for those outcomes, those wider outcomes of enabling public transport. Those are probably more important to us than just limiting traffic generation at peak hours, because it is a very narrow view of operation of the transport network.
You talk about the advantage of people living on one side of the road and working on the other, or one of you did. So you're going to have to deal with the pedestrians.
Yes.
And you can find ways of doing that.
Underpasses or.
Yes. There has been discussions outside this forum in terms of the HIP application that was made by council was made and with specifically mentioned underpasses of the highway to enable just such an activity across the highway, movements from the residential across to the commercial. So those have been considered.
I think a key thing too to the wider discussion is that with regards to that proposed rule, and they were saying that what's critical is the traffic movements generated, not the zoning which results in those traffic movements, or
from a planning perspective, I don't entirely agree with that. You know, there's places that are suitable for from an integrated planning perspective, that people would wish zonings to be in certain locations. So it's not just about direct traffic movements. And also, it's not about just lowering the capacity of the network, because of its capacity here at the moment. And you're looking at a 10-year lifespan, which we're providing infrastructure over a 30-year period, and the funding processes are quite diverse and time-consuming. So if you fill it up because there's capacity here, then it's not an easy task in this district to find more capacity.
Specifically relating to this land from Franklin Slopes North, and whether the provisions were adequate or needed any changes, because those provisions have been assumed to be dealt with in this hearing stream.
Oh, okay,
and
so where
are
you looking at the point?
I'm looking at the reply version, which I think still the same numbers, it's 853.
Right, yeah.